Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Cyber Security Recruiter Podcast. Today, I'm joined by Michael. Michael, how are you doing?
Good. How about yourself?
I'm good. For everyone listening, I've had to apologize to Michael. I've come into the podcast virtual studio doing my recruitment work. So I do apologize, Michael, for being so rude.
No, hey, you got a day job that you got to keep filling. It never ends.
Yeah, exactly. Looking forward to this, mate. It was nice having a little chat with you there before we hit record. I'm just going to do you a bit of an intro for the listeners that don't know you. So for everyone listening, Michael Nelson started off back in the University of Delaware in 2005. You then progressed on into the dev world. You were a software intern for around a year and a half. You then moved on to Miles Technologies. You were a senior implementation and computer forensic examiner for over 5.5 years. You were also a professor at Chestnut Hill College. And then you were at HTCI Delaware Valley. You were vice president and then president there for around 2 years. Currently, you are the managing partner of Cybery, and it's been almost 12 years now, mate. So, Michael, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, good, mate. So I've done you a bit of an intro. I know you were telling me a little bit about what's going on at the minute. It'll be nice to hear who are you, what do you get up to, what's a day in the life like at the minute, and yeah, what do you get up to on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, I mean, that's perfect to jump back into that background a bit. I did go to college for computer science, and at the time, cybersecurity and digital forensics weren't really what they are today. They were still in their infancy, and even today they may still be. So that wasn't really a deep degree program we were offering. So my background was really programming, and I enjoyed it, but really knew that wasn't what I wanted to spend my career in or what I wanted to do for 40 hours a week. And so I got sort of getting interested in more things, doing my own research on cybersecurity, and ended up meeting a police officer at the University of Delaware. His name was Steve Bunting. And talking with him, I found out that he did digital forensics. And I was fascinated by it because I had never heard of it. And I never heard of someone using a computer to investigate crime and see what was happening. And so he and I became friendly. He spoke to the university and they basically agreed to let me spend a year in his police lab learning digital forensics from him instead of going to class for that subject area. And they gave me independent study. And so over that time, I just fell in love with the field. And then being soon to be college graduate, trying to figure out what I was going to do for a career, I Googled computer forensics Philadelphia. And literally at the time, you know, back in 2007, only two companies came up. And so had got interviews with both of them. One was with Miles and another was an e-discovery firm. But basically, let's say Miles was on a Monday, the other one was on a Tuesday. Miles offered me a job on the spot, and like a bright, smart college graduate, I called the second company and said, I'm not even going to interview with you. And so yeah, basically spent 5.5 years there working my way up through the IT ranks and then doing forensics, and then the right people in the organization left. And so for the last 2 years, I was running their forensics program. And then just decided I wanted to do my own thing. So started my own business. And 12 years later, here we are today. And then some of those other things you mentioned, like HTCIA, is actually like a networking group. It's a collaboration between like law enforcement and the private sector for the investigation of crime. So I'm a member of the Delaware Valley chapter. And then I had actually volunteered to be the president for that period of time to basically run the organization in the area. So it was just good to connect and meet with people. But yeah, these days, we're still a small firm. We're a team of six, but we do proactive cybersecurity. So think like penetration tests, vulnerability assessments, and then managed security. So outsource monitoring, alerting, detection for small, medium businesses. And then on the reactive side, we do digital forensics. So that could be everything from discovery in litigation to investigating computers, social media, the cloud, mobile phones, saying what a person did on them and testifying to that in court, or if someone has a breach, doing like a ransomware investigation or email compromise to try to figure out what was touched, was anything exfiltrated, do they really have any kind of notification requirements on their hands? And you know, that piece does have some ties to the insurance world at this point, just because more and more organizations are signing up for cyber liability insurance.
Cool, mate. It sounds like you're in a space that's definitely busy, definitely growing, definitely adding a lot of value. You'll know better than me, Michael. I think I saw a payment for $75 million be announced the other day on a ransomware payment. I've forgotten who to, but it was like, it's a big
yeah, so it's funny. I think it was either yesterday or the day before. I actually myself was reading that same article. There's someone who follows payments, and they said a single payment of $75 million was made for a ransom. And then at the time I looked at it, they were trying to figure out where it came from or like what sector. But I was curious about that as well. But you know, we certainly hear about enterprise matters and some of the partners we work with enterprise, but we typically focus in like the SMB market. But I've seen $1 million, $3 million, $5 million payments. They definitely happen. And if that's happened in the smaller size businesses, you can only imagine what enterprises are paying. And plus, they want to keep their name out of the news or their data around, $75 million may not be much for them to pay.
Yeah, like I say, in relative terms, $1 million for an SMB is huge money. So like you say. But yeah, it's ransomware, that payment. And then obviously I can't help but think, as we come round to Black Hat and DEF CON again, it was about a year anniversary since Caesars and both the casino.
And Caesars. And it's just the PR side of that, because you saw one firm basically paid and said, hey, let's go away. The other said, I'm going to fight a tooth and nail. And you heard more about one in the news than the other, but ultimately they were both hit.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Michael, but the sad thing is, I can't remember which way round which one happened now, but obviously one paid and one didn't. Again, you'll probably remember it better than me, mate. But sad thing is, the one that paid probably came out better. Am I right in saying that?
Yeah, it almost looked better for them in the news, because they were like a subtitle mention, but they weren't the prime time every article was about them. So yeah, in their instance, it definitely worked out in their favor. But every business has to do what's right for them. That's why you have insurance. That's why you have legal counsel. They deal with all the muddy water. And if they say, hey, you're clear to pay and you got the funds to pay and it's the right decision for your business, you should do it. But if you have good backups, if they didn't steal your data, if it's not anything sensitive, then why pay instead of just invest the money in making your technology better and deal with it yourself?
Cool, mate. There's loads of stuff you just said that's making me want to ask you loads of questions. I know you said you didn't, the programming wasn't for you, but I do think coming from that programming background, I do think that gives you an edge. I think it really does. Security, it's a good thing to have, isn't it?
Yeah, so it's funny. Me and my partner Steve joke about it all the time. Now there is actual cybersecurity degrees. There is computer forensics degrees, but we see they're great at teaching like the theory, but there's not a lot of real world element to that. And so even though you may understand cybersecurity, or you may understand forensics, do you really understand IT? Like, how does a network work? How does a VPN work? How is email getting delivered to a system? And so really having that IT background, and even managed services IT is big these days. Someone with that kind of background, because you're not just seeing one network, you're seeing hundreds of different networks because your employer is supporting all those different organizations. It certainly gives you an edge and a leg up, because you really understand IT. And everyone likes to think that security and forensics is special, but all you're really doing is taking IT and either looking at the right logs or plugging the holes that you knew existed as an IT person. Mm-hmm. And so it's still IT at its foundation. And if you can become an expert in that, then you can really pick whatever career you want in this field.
I think the biggest thing, Michael, with you dealing with people in the SMB space, I just think there's so much nuance to that space. There's certain people that can handle that high touch, quite high intensity sometimes, and there's just other people that can't. If you're dealing with those smaller companies, they're sometimes want a bit more attention, don't they?
Yeah, they certainly do. They almost demand that white glove approach, and they're used to it. If you're just thinking of it like tech, it can get frustrating, but then if you actually apply the business angle, it makes sense, because in the SMB market, sometimes you are, but you're not always dealing with private equity or outside money or anything. This could be a person's livelihood. This is their life. This is their kid's college career. This is a retirement plan. If that business is gone, they're done for. But you certainly see that in them. And then also it gets frustrating too, because you see their budget and you might say, hey, you have to do these security things that are required now. And we have flat out heard every kind of possible answer. Some of the funny ones are like, we've had clients say, hey, that's the payment on my beach house. I'm going to keep my beach house instead of security. I'm going to let it ride. And doing what we do, we're like, that's miserable. But at the same time, you're like, you own the business. I can't fault you for it, but you can't spend the money on two different things.
Yeah, it is, mate. I can relate it to a search I'm doing now, a CMMC search. And It's like the way I was describing it is if you're getting an enterprise CMMC compliant, yes, they're bothered. Yes, it matters. But if you're getting an SMB CMMC compliant, that might be the difference between them being able to keep the doors open and not. So it's going to be a testing relationship, isn't it, at times?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. They have to do that just to get the contracts, and they don't even know if they're going to get the contracts for it. And I mean, even with CMMC itself, the amount of times it's changed. And so some people are like, hey, should I take this serious? Is there going to be a 3.0 or 4.0 before this gets enforced? And, you know, am I doing the right thing? It's still a tough market to figure out, especially when you have limited budget.
Yeah, I had a few bold predictions on the phone yesterday from a couple of candidates. So they reckon it's going to be in contracts by January. So we'll see. Yeah. We'll see, mate. But Michael, a few things. Sounds like you obviously got into security way before it was cool. It sounds like meeting I've forgotten the chap's name, police officer.
Yeah.
It sounds like he was a great mentor for you at the time. Was that kind of quite a pivotal moment in terms of your success today and your career progression overall, would you say? Did it make a difference?
Yeah. Anyone I talk to, if we're talking career-wise, I pretty much always attribute my success to him. And it was literally luck. I was in an ethics class in school. He was a guest speaker, and I just fell in love with the topic he had and just went forward and had a passion for it. And then it was funny enough because forensics is still small, but back then it was even smaller. And he wrote one of the original certification books and certifications in the field. And so he was a well-known individual and had a lot of connections. And so it wasn't something I knew going into it, but I got to do some research and have some fun with him. And funny enough, at the time I went to University of Delaware, but I lived up in Pennsylvania, but now I live down in Delaware. And we live about a mile apart from each other. And so we still go grab a drink every few weeks and hang out. And so now it's nice to actually see like the friendship side of it, but he's certainly a mentor to this day. And I think having a professional mentor is always a great thing because it's something starting a business I never really thought of. I was just winging it. And the more I learn and get involved with different groups and you figure out how to run a business, grow a business, you realize as a kid, if you played sports, you always had a coach. You always had someone to guide you, to teach you. So professionally, why don't you have a mentor or a coach, whether it's in your discipline or running a business, to help you figure it out and hold you accountable to different things? And I think it makes all the difference.
Yeah, I think it does. And I think it's really nice for the listeners to hear a real life story like you just told there, because we often talk on the pod about how good a mentor is and how important a mentor is, but to hear you just come out with it like that, I think is really useful and really hits home for the listeners, mate. So thanks. And another point as well is, I think you said you showed a passion. This particular chap really obviously took a liking to that, and that kind of passion's infectious. And I think for people listening, you are really passionate about something that gets you everywhere. I can remember early on in my career, someone tapped me on the shoulder and they just made a comment about how hard that I work. And they basically just don't ever stop that because it just gets you everywhere. I think when you've got some like passion, grit, excitement, I think people see that have been on the path that you're going on and they can't help but want to help you.
Yeah, no, exactly. And it even brings me back to like when we're talking to like potential candidates or employees, especially in the IT career, because we know when we were growing up and doing it, you worked during the day, but at night you were tinkering, you were doing something, you were reading a technical book. We're just about to be 12 years old in the business and 5.5 years before that. So let's just say rough math, 20 years, I've had something to do for this. Of those 20 years, probably 15 years, I was reading tech books. It's only the last 3 or 4 years I've actually started reading business books and trying to convert my mind to how they run business. But anytime we talk to a candidate, what does your home lab setup look like? What are you testing? What are you playing with at night when you're not working? And some of them will be like, hey, I'm a gamer. And so I actually built my own gaming computer and then I tried to make it faster and do this and that. And I configured the network. And other people will be like, hey, no, I'm burned out from the day. And you're like, one hand, you get the burnout, but you're like, in the IT field, you have to be doing something at night. You have to have that passion. You want to learn. And it's always, you're always excited when someone says, oh yeah, I got all this at home. I'm doing this. And then you're always like the person who says, hey, when I'm done for the day, I'm done. You're like, I don't really know if they're going to make it, at least in cybersecurity or forensics, because there's so much to learn and figure out. And you got to constantly learn because what you know today is not always going to work tomorrow because the field changes so much.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I can tell you one thing for sure is people that do want to just literally shut off at that time, I don't think they would be very well suited to the MSP space.
Yeah, exactly. There's nothing wrong with that mindset or those type of people. There's plenty of careers out there. But yeah, the MSP space, security space, alerts never stop. New types of attacks never stop. There's always something new to learn. It's almost a way of life, at least for this field.
Definitely. And let's say, even if you're on the blue team or the IR side or whatever that might be, even if you're on the offensive side, it still never stops. Because if you're not, like to your point, if you're not truly into it and on it and passionate, mm-hmm. you might be great now, but you won't be great in 2 years' time. It just moves too fast.
Yeah, exactly. And even thinking on like the offensive side, I went through offensive securities, OSCP, offensive security certified professional. And their whole methodology is, I think it's great. There's a book that's a couple hundred pages, maybe 8 hours of videos, but then they give you access to a lab with 40, 50 computers, and their whole motto is try harder. Mm. We told you the basics. After that, it's figured out. And what it tells you is try harder, because if you're doing offensive security, there's all the known exploits and all the known ways to get in, all the things the tools automate. But there's plenty of things that can be broken if you do it by hand or if you actually just try harder. Just because there's not a way to get in doesn't mean if you don't spend more time looking at it that you won't actually find a new way in that no one's ever thought of before. Mm-hmm. So there's plenty of things that can be done in that space.
Yeah, mate, I agree with what you're saying. I think sometimes people are almost scared to say try hard or you've got to grind. And I say fair enough, if you don't want that and you're really not into that kind of working life and you want to get an internal, again, that's cool. But I think for those that, because I'm a bit like you, mate, like I used to think I was a bit weird. Like I'll stop working and I'll put a recruitment pack my friends and family. Like I find it quite, that's my way of relaxing. It's maybe I'm weird or maybe we're all a bit sick. I don't know, but it's good fun, mate, isn't it? It's really, when I'm in that state of forward momentum, I actually am more relaxed. When I stop working, I get quite anxious. I can overthink a lot. I'm in my most relaxed state when I'm actually just moving forward, progressing, and actually working pretty hard is when I'm.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you. No, it certainly can be stressful, but it's almost like a peaceful mindset. You have things to get done, you figure it out. It takes so much attention span that there's just something about it that's soothing, and you just want, it's a puzzle. You want to figure it out. Yeah. And in security and forensics, there's always a different twist or angle, and there's always a deadline. So there's always a drive to get it done, and it keeps it interesting.
Yeah. Definitely, mate. Really struck me, Mark. I really feel for job seekers these days and like juniors and stuff, because I was, look, back in the day before security was cool, you applied for two companies, got an interview at both. Obviously, the first one you went to ended up being great for your career growth. And I think about young people on the market today and about these job adverts going up with 300-400 applicants and it being really, really tough. It might be quite a hard question to ask, but have you got any like tips for juniors out there that are trying to get a foothold, or anyone trying to get a foothold on the market? Or is there anything you like when you're looking for people? Is there any ways you like to be approached or don't like to be approached for the listeners?
Yeah, yes. I feel like one of the biggest underrated things, which when I was, I'm still tech these days, I still do technical work. When I was a pure tech and employee at a job or looking to grow or move, I just always focused on tech. And now as a business owner, part of the job is focusing on networking. Go to conferences, go to networking events. So it's, hey, I get this job application has 400 employee or 400 candidates, but if you're going for a cybersecurity job, have you ever gone to Black Hat or DEF CON that we were talking about happening this week? Have you ever gone to RSA? One of the things I mentioned that we both brought up in my background was that HTCIA group. That was a local group between law enforcement and digital forensics professionals in the Philadelphia region. Even as an employee, I was a member of that. So I knew the local police officers who did forensics. I knew the local businesses who did it. And you basically get that in because you actually know names. And so if something like that, a job offer goes out or application opens, you can actually say, because I was a member of this group, because I did these events, I actually know John works there. This might be John's program. I'm going to reach out to John and say, hey, here's my skill set. Here's my capabilities. You've seen me at these five events. I'm trying. That probably gives you a leg up on at least 390 of the other candidates, because you could have 10 rock stars and you might still not beat the 10, but at least you got ahead of the 390 because you knew somebody, because you were involved in the community. And the same thing now with social media and LinkedIn and different sources being what they are, you know, there's plenty of people who are, you know, technical influencers in different things. Have you followed them? Have you liked them? Have you commented or sent them a message? Because a lot of people, especially in this field, no matter what the title is, we're also basically tech nerds. So anyone in this field is really still willing to talk shop with you. So, I mean, I feel like the difference is the people aspect. If you can get involved, I think that makes all the difference in the world.
It really does, mate. And I think a key point for people to remember as well is it's like the minute you start realizing that you've got to give first before you get. And if you just give without even, like you've mentioned there, volunteering, helping out, meeting people, you just get right into that with an open mindset, being really friendly, and stuff comes of it, and you enhance your network. It benefits other people. It benefits you. It benefits everyone. And it's, I think sometimes people just maybe look at a situation like what they can get. But if you almost just switch off from that and just go, what can I give? How can I help? Yeah. It does come back round, mate, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And I even experienced this 2 weeks ago. One of our clients, his daughter is going to school up in upstate New York. She's in college. She's going to be a sophomore, but she had some interest in cybersecurity. So he's, would you mind talking with her? And so I sat down with her for an hour and a half, and I was just like, well, you know about security, what'd you like? And she was, hey, I really like technical. I like cybersecurity, but my dad had also had a business my whole life, and so I'm interested in business. And I'm like, all right, it's not going to be day one, but you could actually plan a career towards being like a chief information security officer where you're a tech person, but you actually have a business board seat. And so you have both aspects of that. But I was like, there's also the sales angle where you're still, you could sell a product like SentinelOne, but you're selling that to enterprise. So you're going to be involved in business decisions. Or with cyber liability insurance, you could go into the insurance space and have a business risk mindset, but you're still all technical because if you've ever filled out an insurance application, you know it's 200 questions and 30 pages at this point. And so you have to have that technical understanding to do it. And so there's so many different angles, but in talking with her, it definitely opened up her eyes. I gave her a couple of conferences to check out. And then I was like, I know in Philadelphia, there's like a women in cybers group. There's a women in the discovery group. I was like, check those out and other people. And then I also introduced her to some of our clients who are like women-owned business. And I was like, here, talk to someone who's done this in the tech field and see if this makes sense to you. And again, it just leads to more conversations. And I think it sets her up to have options in her future. And it's like the same thing that was done for me with my mentor.
I tell you what, a cybersecurity interest and a business interest, that's quite a lethal combination in a good way, I'd say, at that age.
Yeah, exactly. And that happened even with like things in New York, where they're forcing like financial companies to have a technical board seat, where at some point, someone with a technical mindset does also have to have a business mindset. They have to get blended together. And I think that's where things are headed, because no matter what your business is these days, you're so dependent on data. And you being over in the UK, you already have mandated privacy laws, but now we're slowly getting there and we have cyber liability enforcing things. So at some point, all businesses are going to be forced into compliance. And so they're going to have to understand both sides.
Yeah, no, definitely, mate. It's, yeah, GD and stuff like that hit pretty hard in the kind of UK and Europe and stuff like that. But it's, yeah, I sometimes wonder if there's a lot of talk about that CISO position at the minute. I think they are starting to command more respect in the boardroom, but it's good that we talk about CISOs more, because I don't think that they've always got the level of respect they deserve, and certain companies just don't give them the respect and even the compensation, or even like the level of say so at board level that they should get. I think until a company's been a bit, then maybe they do.
That kind of hits on multiples. Yeah, I agree, because everyone's, even a CISO, everyone still views them as IT, and every organization views IT as a cost center. They don't. It's rare to find an organization that says, "Hey, my technology is the reason I'm great." Instead, they're like, "Hey, we're great, and we still have to pay for IT." And so it's tough. And then it's a relatively newer role, so it's still trying to find its grounds. But then, good or bad, you look at things like Solar, and you see this CISO got named in all the litigation and compliance outcome of it. And then as a tech person, you know, do I ever want to step into a role like that, knowing that I could be the one responsible for all this when the decision was out of my hand to begin with, or different things? And so it's still a tough role that's being figured out. But if you look at that in security, it's the pinnacle of a security career. That's, you can't really progress beyond there. And the mindset needs to change around it. And the kind of funny thing is, you said no one takes that role, importantly, until you have a breach or something. And we see that in managed security. Majority of managed services clients are someone who was breached before and just said, I never want to have it happen again. I'll make the budget. I'll make it happen, because I was woken up. And I think privacy laws and other things are going to help wake up the rest of the community. But until then, yeah, it takes that breach to have it come to fruition.
Yeah, it does, mate. It's definitely heading in the right direction. It just never happens as quick as we think. But yeah, back to SolarWinds. I think it's good D&O and good insurance, and indemnity insurance that the CISOs need. I don't know. It's that SolarWinds one's scary, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that certainly was. And even now, watching the stuff between CrowdStrike, Delta, and Microsoft going on, you get a new news clip every couple hours, and that's certainly entertaining. It's going to be interesting to see how that plays out, because you have the base operating system, you have a security product on top of it, you have updates, you have businesses down, and just interesting to see all those points come together. And the fact that it was not a cyber attack makes it more interesting, because you get to see how it all plays out.
Cool. Yeah, no, thanks, Michael. Over the years, man, I'm sure, obviously, running your own business for a long time, I'm sure there's been good times, there's been bad times, ups and downs. Have you got any tips, like, on the mindset side, or for keeping your mind right, or just keeping in that right frame of mind? If there's people out there that are struggling for whatever reason, any tips on that front, mate?
Yeah, that kind of question hits me from multiple angles, because it's one, don't forget your passion. Because there was a reason you got into it. There's a reason you have interest in it. So still do that. But then also don't forget that you have a life outside of work. The next breach is always going to be out there. The next security flaw, the next big hack. There's always going to be something. But you still have a life outside of work, whether it's family or kids or something else. So you got to step away for a moment from there. But being as a business owner, I think of that question differently too, because like I said, for the first 10 years of my business, all I focused on was tech. And then I realized that there was a business behind it. And how's that business being run? The bills were being paid, but are we trying to grow this thing? Are we trying to turn it into anything? Is this something that could ever be sold or handed off? Or does it die with me because I just did technical work all day? Mm-hmm. So also trying to figure out, what does your future look like? And how do you make a plan to evolve into something? I think that helps, you to not focus on the immediate day-to-day in front of you.
Cool, man. I really like that. Don't forget your passion, and don't forget you've got a life outside of work. I had a candidate in process the other week, and he was like doing this technical test, and he was going through the motions. And I actually said, don't forget to enjoy it, mate. I said, this is actually meant to be good fun. He was like, oh, God, yeah, shit. It's like sometimes we all do it. We all get stressed and we all get uptight. And I think sometimes it is, like you said, just whether it's don't forget to enjoy it or don't forget your passion. I think it's good to have that, because it's so easy to forget.
At work, is we have an unlimited paid time off policy. It's across the board for everyone in the organization, with the caveat of be a professional. Because I mean, with what we do, with us being a small business, small team, doing breach response and different things, we never know when a project's going to come in. And somehow they always come in Friday at 5 p.m. or a holiday, always a bad time. And so you're always constantly saying, hey, would you mind spending a couple extra hours, or would you mind working this weekend? And so there's no true way to plan, like true vacation. So it's, hey, if you worked overnight, don't come in the next morning or the next day, get caught up. Or you've worked a lot these past 6 months, someone offered you to go to Europe for 2 weeks, go. We'll survive for the 2 weeks. You got to live your life outside of that, because yeah, especially in this field, the hours can be long and unexpected.
No, definitely. Are you fully remote?
So it's hybrid. So we do still have an office. So the main reason we have an office, so on the forensic side for like litigation stuff, we basically have like digital evidence. So sometimes we might have computers, mobile phones, all the things that we take possession of while litigation is ongoing. And so we need a place to keep that. So our office is a central repository for that. And then I am a firm believer that in the IT space, when you're young, you learn the most by being around other people and just having that conversation, just brainstorming ideas back and forth. I think that does tremendous things for your career. So we do have people that want to be in the office every day. We also have people who it's not convenient. So like for me, I live 2 hours from my office. So when we get off this, I'm actually driving up there. So I'll drive up there. I'll spend the night in a hotel. I'll be there for 2 days and I'll come back. So I do 3 days at home, 2 days there. But we do have some people who do every day, some people who do a couple of days a week. And for us, being in the tech space, you can do your work from anywhere. So the office is really that collaboration spot.
Mate, it's so true. And the junior point's so true as well. That learning through osmosis that I certainly had, and I'm sure you did, Michael, it's largely not what it used to be, is it? And it does make a difference. I'm remote pretty much all the time, but now and again, I'll work with teammates, and it is easier when you're together.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I look at it now, and like remote is definitely convenient, allows for a lot of things. I love it, but I also realize I love it 20 years later. I don't think I'd be where I was at today if the first 10 years of my career, I was allowed to be remote. Because I think by being around other people, having random conversations, or tapping the guy next to me and saying, hey, I can't figure this out, can you look at this with me for 5 minutes? I think it made all the difference.
I tell you what I did see, going off a bit here, but I tell you what I did see recently. I saw this hologram technology that basically is coming out. So it's, say me and you were on the same team, Michael, it would be like there'd be a hologram of each other. So we'd literally feel like we're together. I don't know if that's a bit freaky, but it certainly got me thinking. I was like, maybe a remote business could scale really easily if we just have holograms in a room and pretend we're all together.
Right. Yeah, because I constantly see, because you saw like all the advertising in the market for like the Apple Vision Pro that came out, and it looked really cool, but it was also expensive. And so not like a lot of people are new. But when you watch the videos and you think about it, like something like that, where, yeah, if a whole team had them, everyone could be remote. But if they all have them on, they're basically all together. And you can't blend the world. Maybe that's where the technology is going to allow people to be wherever they want. But then they can still technically be side by side no matter what.
Yeah, I think it's the way it's going. I listened to a podcast. It was all about working arrangements. And that they said exactly what you've just said there, is that over the next kind of 5, 6, 10 years, we're going to start seeing more and more advanced kind of technology like that coming our way. But yeah, that could get really interesting, mate. But Michael, I know we touched upon it earlier. You mentioned about when you're doing an interview and someone talks about reconfiguring a network and making their gaming system faster and not being able to put it down, and it really excites you. For people listening, is there any other kind of hints or tips or anything else you look for, or any kind of do's and don'ts within the recruiting or the hiring process that the listeners would benefit from hearing about?
Yeah, really that kind of comes back to those basic things. What are you doing after hours? Do you have IT foundation? IT is a thankless job. People are only calling you because there's a problem. They can't print, they can't email. They're calling you for the mess. But you learn a lot of things and you figure a lot of things out. If you don't want to do IT for a career, can you suffer through it for a year or two? Or while you're still in school, can you do an internship there? Because I think those foundations make the difference in a career, because you actually understand things better. And then, like I said before, if there's a field you want to be in, there's got to be a group that's tied to that, and go join that group. Be part of the community before you even try to get into it. And you realize that you already made the first step and you're already part of it when the job comes around.
Definitely, mate. There's a saying in recruitment, and I've said it before on different shows, but your network is your net worth. And it's so true. If people, I think it puts a safety net around your career. If you're ever in need, or if you ever get laid off, which is quite relevant at the minute, there's people there that can help you.
Strong network. And keep in touch with people too. If you went to college or university with someone and you spent 5 years and you guys were doing your technical assignments together and they went off, you went off, check in with them every once in a while. Go grab a beer with them if they're local and you can, because you never know where they're at. And they might say, hey, we actually have an opening, love to work with you again. So you really never know where things go. And even me, where I moved in Delaware, it's not a big city area. I was in the big city and now in a remote area. And so even me, I still go on LinkedIn and I look for technical people in this area, because I'm like, hey, it's actually cool that there's some technical people in this area that there's not really a technical need for. And some of them have been with like big name cybersecurity companies that you wouldn't even expect. And so I send them messages and I'm like, hey, we're both cybersecurity or forensics or tech people in Delaware. Looks like we're not far from each other. You want to grab a beer? And literally just Monday afternoon, I spent two hours talking to a guy. And he was a CEO of a tech company in the cybersecurity space that everyone would know. And I just happened to find out on LinkedIn that he lived down the street from me. And so it's look and see who's around you too. And don't be afraid to reach out.
Definitely. And you know what? I think since COVID, I know I've fallen into the trap of just getting too digital and too remote. Like one of my clients, they're in Miami. I'm in their Slack group. And a few of them are in Spain. And they were all messaging me in their Slack group going, come down. I was like, no, I'm busy. And they were like, we've flown all the way across here and you're like 2 hours down the road because I'm in the UK. And I was like, do you know what? You're right. Anyway, I flew straight down. Went to him for 4 or 5 days. And I had a great time once I got there. But it was like, I was resisting. And I think you can always get in the habit of just getting used to being behind the screen. And I'm not sure it's a good thing. I think you're right, mate. We've got to actually shake some hands, buy some beers and buy some dinners, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it makes all the difference, because the keyboard's not going to get you the job. It's how you portrayed yourself to everyone else.
Definitely, mate. I think if you're more experienced, you probably get away with it more. But for younger people listening and juniors listening, like, nothing ever really is going to happen if you just sit behind that. You've got to get out there and make it happen. And so, I think so many people won't be as well. So if you do, you probably stand out even more these days. If you tell someone you're off to meet them these days, it's what? Like, it's like a bit of a US.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And I think that the younger crowd has it tough because they're at the age where you still have to do both. You have to become the technical expert, but you also have to meet people too. You're basically burning the candle at both ends. Whereas, you know, us, like 20 years later, I still need to maintain and grow, but I can focus more time on people and different things. And so you see that, but yeah, for a good point of your career, you got to put in that overtime.
Yeah, definitely, mate. You mentioned OSCP earlier. Can you give us any more? Did you say you took the course? You actually take the certification or you take the course? Or?
Yeah, so that was the first 10 years of my career. I basically took 15 different certifications. So I literally did nothing other than read tech books. And the way I visioned it was my background was forensics. And so I basically wanted to take all the forensic certifications I could. So, you know, I did a general computer forensic certification. Then I did, you know, a Windows certification, a Mac certification, a mobile phone certification, networking. And then, you know, as cybersecurity became what it did, I started taking cybersecurity certifications because even though I was the forensics guy and other people on the team would do pen testing, I still wanted to know it well enough to either one, be able to talk intelligently about it, or two, if there was overflow and the team needed help, I wanted to be able to help. And yeah, I just went down the path. But yeah, for a period of time, I was maintaining about 15 different certifications in either forensics or cybersecurity.
As well. No, it's CISPIC.
Yeah, so I do have my CISSP. So some of the more entry level ones, I'm starting to let them fall off because I haven't had a need for them. But some like the CISSP, I'll just maintain that moving forward because once you got it, you get it. And that's one that any organization looks for.
Yeah, no, definitely. I really like what you say as well about knowing what the team are doing. Like a lot of I know how important that is for a business leader, business owner, in terms of like retention and keeping the team happy. Because a lot of the candidates I speak to are advertised. It's all done through like predominantly my network and headhunting. But a lot of the passive talent I speak to, one of the reasons they're up for moving and speaking to me in the first place is the person leading the team doesn't have a clue what they're doing. So it breaks the communication down. So I think the fact that you've got, I think it's great for the team. Like I said, it's great for practical reasons like overflow. But also I think it's good for like culture and keeping things good internally as well.
Yeah, yeah. You always have something to talk about. You can educate others and you can even help the team troubleshoot because there might be someone on the team who they're a different department than you, but you can still teach them or they can still teach you and you can still learn something because you have that common foundation. And if you think about security and forensics, they're the yin and yang of each other. They both exist because of each other. Even though you might be a forensics person, by actually learning pen testing, you learn how hacking happens.
Oh, yeah.
And then so you can reverse it and say, okay, if I did this, where does this leave a trace or where would I end up? What would I do? Now let me go look there for artifacts. And the same thing for forensics. You're like, hey, I've seen this happen on 3 different ransomware cases. Let's go see if I could actually make it happen on my own and jump into something and then do that. And so I think they feed into each other and give you that more rounded perspective of what's possible.
100%. You see it with pen testers as well. If you can break something and build something and defend it, attack it, yeah, it's having that holistic approach and view on things definitely helps. But on OSCP, Michael, it's such a well-known across the industry. Is there anything now that you wish you knew before you took it that could help people?
Yeah, so it's funny. I took that one out of curiosity. I thought it was going to be fun. That was literally the hobby because, like I said, I was passionate about technical work. I was a technical nerd. In college, I ended up meeting that police officer because I got interested in hacking and there wasn't really a thing for that back then. And then when I got into my professional IT career, I first took like my Security Plus thinking, oh, that's going to make me a hacker. And it teaches you foundations of security. And then there's Certified and Ethical Hacker, which I also took. I was like, oh, by the end of that, I got to know how to be a pen tester. And you take that and you realize it's just more foundation. And then you look at CISSP, that's where management. So I was like, there's got to be a certification that flat out says, this is how you do a pen test. This is how you hack. This is how you figure it out. And I stumbled across that. And one, like I said, I took it at a time where I just wanted to learn it to do it. had interest. And then at the time, my wife was pregnant too. So like I had free time on my hands. And so I was like, well, what can I do? And I was like, this is going to be my entertainment. Instead of watching TV, I'm going to literally learn how to hack. And so I think for me, it was just a passion and interest. But that specific certification, unless you have IT experience, unless you want to do their motto of try harder and actually figure it out, it's going to be a tough one to do. Luckily, I did that 15 years into my career and I had enough, but it wasn't easy. It was still a grind, but it to me, I'd rather do that than play a video game. That was my video game for the 6 months that I worked on it and I enjoyed it. And so it's almost like, hey, can this be, yes, you're learning, but can this be entertainment for you as well?
Yeah, mate, I love that. Everyone else is getting stressed about it. You're just taking it as a hobby. That's great.
Because when you think about it, what you're actually learning, it's cool. There's TV shows about this. Like, there's real world news about this. And you're actually learning this skill set. It's basically a game. And if you're in the IT space, at least in my mind, I don't see how you don't see that as fun.
Yeah. Have you ever thought about or looked at PMPT, the one from TCM Security?
So I hadn't looked into that one. And again, because it wasn't my direct focus, I haven't gone down the avenue all of them. And just the OSCP being the name of what it was and understanding what I was going to get to do in it, that was there. But yeah, I've definitely heard of the Pentester one, but it's, I think even their Pentester Academy, and they have their whole series of courses and labs. So it's probably very similar look and feel, but yeah, because it wasn't my day-to-day focus, it wasn't something I followed up with.
Yeah, I think they're the guys that I've had Joe from TCM on the show, and they're like rivaling Offset with that. I tell you what was really interesting for me, Michael. I knew people that were passing the OSCP. They were taking the PMPT coursework to pass the OSCP, which is it was getting really good results. So it was like a great way to approach it. But
yeah, it definitely makes sense because, again, I don't know the whole history behind it, but they feed off each other because OSCP at the end of the day is you're doing a pen test and the end result is you have to get into the machines and you have to write a pen test report. And like I said, the training is a handful of hours of videos, some PDFs, and go attack this lab. So if you can take a whole second course that also teaches pen testing, they both got to feed into each other because at the end of the day, it doesn't matter where you learn the skills, you still got to learn, you still got to be able to do that pen test and write the report to get the certification.
How much prep did you get all the lab? Did you get, I think it's 60 or 90 hours. Did you get the lab time?
So yeah, I think I did 90 days of the lab time. And then I think I got through like half of the machines. I got through the big name ones that there was like YouTube videos and songs about. And then once I had a comfort level, I was like, all right, I think I don't have, there's some people who go to the end of the world and they want to get into every machine. And I think that was cool too. But again, because it wasn't my focus area, I wanted to know enough to be comfortable. And then knowing that a buffer overflow is a big part of that training, you're probably going to see that in testing. Me having a computer science background, even though, again, I didn't want to be a programmer, I at least had the foundational knowledge of programming to understand how a buffer flow works. And because I knew that concept, I was like, I think I'm in a comfortable spot to move on and test. But yeah, you could probably spend a year playing in that lab with all the different machines and ways you could do about it. And again, if I had free time on my hand, I'd probably go back and do more of it for fun. There's only so much.
There is, mate. If you're running a business as well and trying to enhance and refine and get that skill set better and better all the time, you probably transition more into that one. How have you found that journey, by the way? Has that been good fun as well?
Yeah, I mean, that 2 years ago, it was an idea of, hey, how do we take this tech thing and actually make it a business? We were a business, but how do we do that? And so now I'm slowly trying to transition myself out of technical work, not because I don't want to do technical work, but I realize there's another job that needs to be done. Mm-hmm. Someone needs to figure out how to actually make this business work and what can we do with it. And so, yeah, I finally put down the tech books and I started reading business books. Like, how do you structure a business? How do you bring in sales? How do you do accounts payable, receivable, different things? And just like back in the day, I had joined technical groups. I'm now joining business groups. Like, one of the groups I'm a member of is called Entrepreneurs Organization. And it's a business for entrepreneurs. And they do learning events for different things, like how to do cash flow, how to do sales, different things. Oh, okay. But I also am paired in a forum with 6 other business owners where we get together once a month for 5 hours. And it's the top 5%, the bottom 5%. What's the best thing in the world because you have a business that you can't share with anyone else because they don't understand? What's the worst thing in the world because you have a business and can't share? And then also it's what's going on in your personal life too, because that's going to affect how the business goes. And yeah, it's really been interesting to try to figure out how to go from a tech to a business owner and try to let some of those technical certifications expire, because I'm going to try to get some of the business ones. And again, it's that lifelong learning. I'm now trying to learn a new aspect and learn something else.
It's good. And that's the whole fun, mate, as well, realizing that it just never ends. The whole excitement is in the bit that you're talking about, that forward momentum. I think that's where the biggest buzz is. When you stop or when you get to where you thought you wanted to go, sometimes there's a bit of an anticlimax. Whereas when you're actually heading towards it, I think that's the best bit.
Yeah, exactly. And like I said, I have that 2-hour drive. So I listen to a lot of Audible books on my drive. And one I did like a month or two ago was The E-Myth. And if you've ever heard of that book, it's basically like a lot of people in like professional trades start businesses because, hey, I was a good barber, I'm gonna start my own barbershop. I was a good plumber, I'm gonna start my own company. Me, I was a good friends with this guy, I'm gonna start my own friends with company. But they basically call it like the entrepreneurial seizure, where you're you think you're running a business, but no, you basically have a job. You're just working for yourself. You're not actually ever running a business until you actually step back and you're like, wait a minute. If something happens to me, the business doesn't exist. And so we actually start saying, okay, you need these pieces in place to actually have a business. And you realize there's a whole new learning ball game to that.
Yeah, I've done it on a couple of episodes, Michael, but I wanted to do more episodes on what you've described there, because I was like, what podcasts are out there for cybersecurity business owners, and just different ways to raise cash. Like I was thinking, how many go out to a private equity company to raise cash? But I know you can, if you've got like recurring revenue in your business, you can leverage up against that. You can leverage up against the brand. You can leverage up against professional services fees coming in. So you've split one business down into three components where you can raise capital. It's like maybe private equity would be the best way for people to raise or thing for the, you know, but it would be nice to actually talk about. I think I want to get more people like yourself on and just really talk about that, because I think that could be really helpful.
Yeah, because I think that's a whole education that you don't have, being a technical person trying to figure out how the business runs. Because, you know, you might think private equity is great and might work out for some, but other people, they don't realize what they're giving up to give that cash, and they might lose sale of their business. But at the same time, when you're starting business, cash flow is everything. And just because you might have done a great engagement, you might take 90 days to get paid. And you're like, how am I paying myself for those 90 days? How am I paying my employees? You begin to learn. Then you get the American Express card, and then it has no limit. You're like, how am I going to pay down no limit? And then you get a business line of credit and then different interest rates. So actually understanding cash flow is thing. And again, like you said, sources of where you can get funding or temporary funding. And is it the right kind of funding? Because you might go to the wrong source and you might be paying credit card rates to hold on to cash or to make ends meet. And you're giving up a lot of the profit that you may have had. And at the end of the day, you might not be paying yourself anything. So yeah, there's a lot of things that you learn by doing it the wrong way.
Yeah, it's so true, man. It's so true what you said. Do you say entrepreneur? What was the phrase you used? Entrepreneur
See, that's what the E-Myth calls it. Okay. You had the idea and then you go right back to doing a job. It's just you're doing it for yourself instead of someone else.
You see it in recruitment. How many great security professionals just basically probably get a little bit annoyed about where they are for different reasons, want to create like a better culture, want to provide a better service, and they just go, give it a go. And it's like, that is probably the bulk of entrepreneurs across the world. And it's to get to that next level, you do need to put some kind of knowledge framework structure behind it if you want to kick onto that next level. And again, it's good fun, but it's a lot of effort, but it's fun.
Yeah, and it teaches you a lot too, because one of the things some of these business groups teach is you can never focus on the person or the company next to you. Everyone's different. So just because they got there, you didn't, or why didn't I get there quick enough? Especially when you look at cybersecurity, there's an Amazon office not far from me. What could I make by going to apply for a security job at Amazon? And then I look at what I'm making as a business owner and you're like, well, am I trading those headaches in? And so you got to grow the business to compete with that. And so it's really just looking at, hey, is being an entrepreneur the right thing for me? Does it give me the right stock, lifestyle, the right income? Or am I better off going to Google or Amazon or one of these big name companies and being part of a team? Because with some of these salaries are in cybersecurity, you could have a great life with them as well. So it's, again, going back, what is your passion and what are you trying to get out of it?
I look at the accounts of different recruitment agencies and you see some really small ones. ran really well, leveraging AI and automation in the right place, maybe leveraging some low-cost jurisdictions for staffing and stuff like that behind the scenes. And I look at what they're making, and they're making this, there's four or five of them, and they're making the same money as what a 50, 60, even 100 person agency is. It's just, it's having that visibility and awareness, and like you say, talking in groups and stuff like that. Is it EOS that you're talking about, Michael, or is that something different?
So EOS, the Entrepreneur Operating System. So when, so EO is the actual group that I'm part of, but they do teach EOS. And so we're actually in ourselves in the process of working to figure out EOS. And we actually have a meeting with an implementer coming up to just learn more about the process and see how we can apply it.
Anyone I know that's mastered that has normally smashed it in business, by the way. So I'd probably say you're probably onto something there.
Yeah. Yeah, a few of the guys that I know have done it are very well off. And I've read the book Traction, and it makes a ton of sense. Yes. So when you actually try to figure out how to apply it, it's a good roadmap to figure out what do I do next.
Yeah, definitely, mate. Cool, mate. All right. But as we come to the end, I used to say any books, any kind of online content you consume, or it doesn't have to be security related, it can be, but anything that's maybe helped your career or had a really good positive impact on your career that could help the listeners, my friend, in terms of what you found online and stuff.
Yeah, in terms of that, like I said, the first 15 years of my career was all technical books. It was everything on like forensics in general, file systems, Macs, mobile phones, incident response. But again, now that I'm trying to target more to learn in business. I mentioned the E-Myth. So, I mean, that's great for actually, if you're interested in starting a business, that kind of tells you what everyone does wrong who does it, because you basically just have a job and you're not actually running a business. And so it's eye-opening. Traction, which we just meant for EOS, it's actually how to implement the structure for a business. And then another one is like Profit First. It's a book about building a profitable business. And a lot of people might take the name wrong and thinking, hey, it shouldn't all be about the profit. But it actually, it's a book about budgeting and how to actually budget for a business. So I think that's helpful. And then two others, Rich Dad Poor Dad was another one I listened to, as well as The Five Love Languages. And again, they're not business books, but what are you doing with your life outside of your career? And if you're doing well in business, are you doing well in your personal life? And what else can you learn and figure out and make it well-rounded instead of just being good in one area?
Yeah, thank you, mate. Is that the one where you get a score system and you score each department of your life, basically?
Yep.
Yeah, I've heard that. I should do that, really, because I think the personal life one's probably always a bit too low for me. The work one's okay. The work one's good for me. But thank you, mate. It's been really good, mate. It genuinely sounds to me like you're at a really exciting point in your journey, like I say, with EOS, and you've got like a nice structure and a platform to now build off and really go and have some fun and make stuff happen over the next kind of 2, 3, 5, 10 years. It sounds like you're in a nice spot. You've got like a really solid launch pad to go with now. Sounds good.
Yeah, we're definitely excited. We're looking forward to it. And no, I tell everyone for the first 10 years, I was just trying to do good technical work and figure it out. And now I feel like I figured out that part. So now it's step one. And can I actually figure out a business? And if I do, it'll be exciting and fun. And if not, there's always the technical work.
Yeah. Listen, mate, it looks to me, mate, I know we're just releasing the audio, but I can see Michael on camera for the listeners. It looks like you've got a few years ahead of you just yet, mate. I think you've got plenty of time, buddy.
It's that baby face.
Yeah, no, mate, you've got loads of years ahead of fun. But no, nice to see you, mate. Thank you for your time. I enjoyed it, mate. It's nice to hear it. Nice to mix an episode in with a bit of entrepreneurial business stuff and technical stuff. Nice to get that OSCP stuff in as well, and some other things and the bits about the mentoring and hearing your journey on how you've progressed and stuff. It's been good, and I know it will be helpful for the listeners, mate. So nice to see you, and thanks again, and I'm sure we'll catch up soon, buddy.
Yeah, absolutely. Appreciate you having me.